moth population that should be there.
And apartment dwellers can pitch in by adopting a tree in their building's yard and creating a soft landing for caterpillars.
And if everybody adopted a single tree on that yard, then you've got a much healthier landscape and the individual gets to contribute a little bit.
To learn more about Homegrown National Park and how to take part in their simple grassroots solution to the biodiversity crisis, visit birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Remmel.
Beep, 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 beep.
Transmitting from Zucchini Land, it's Steve, Jack, and Sam, the Zucchini Brothers, live at the clubhouse.
Beep, 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 beep. Let's all get together, have a little fun. Let's all get together, dance under the sun. Shake your head and body round, everybody must get down. Shake your head and body round, everybody must get down.
Get down on the radio, in the clubhouse, with the Zucchini Brothers. Yeah, going to different places, doing different things.
A gentle summer rain taps a lullaby on the trees and rooftops here in Zucchini Land, where reality steps aside, opening the door to one's imagination. Where seasons change from week to week with a promise of new adventure. Where hopes and dreams dance with the magic of music. It is here that we find the Zucchini Brothers, Jack, Steve, and Sam, with their dog Polly and their friend Susan on the front porch of the clubhouse. It's story day.
What a beautiful day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you're a duck, it is.
Well, we do need the rain. It helps everything grow.
Yeah. But we need the sunshine, too.
Well, how about a story from Odd's Bodkin? It's an old Native American tale called Theft of Fire.
Story time. Story time. Story time. Story time.
Had stolen fire from the animals. Thunder, in a great whirling storm cloud, had reached down toward the earth, stolen all the fire in the fire pit, and flown off. Thunder, who lived beyond the western mountains in a great longhouse with his three daughters, each of whom had fangs which came to beneath her chin. And Thunder sat in front of the fire he had stolen, watched it burn, and said,
"Now only I have fire."
But do you know? As the winds of winter began to blow, and the animals no longer had fire, they began to die. They could not warm themselves at the great fire pit. Deer, fox, raccoon, wolf, moose, wolverine. One by one, as the snows grew deeper and the winds blew harder, they died. Many years went by. Almost all the animals had perished from the earth. And one summer day, Lizard and his brother were sunning themselves on two great gray rocks.
Brother!
Yes, brother?
Brother, look!
Where, brother?
There, brother!
The two Lizard brothers looked. There, rising from beyond the peaks of the western mountains, was smoke.
Brother!
Yes, brother?
brother, where there's smoke, there's fire, 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 yes. And the two lizard brothers leapt off the rock and fell to their bellies and as fast as they could ran to the great fire pit where all the animals stood looking at the cold ashes. Look, smoke, smoke. While the animals turned their heads, indeed, smoke rose from beyond the western mountains. They knew that must be where Thunder lived. That must be where the stolen fire was. And they knew someone had to go steal it back. Well, then I'll go. You go. I don't want to go. No, you go. No, I want to go. No, you go. I don't want to go. Not me. No. They were all very much afraid. Until at last it was decided. Three brave animals would be sent upon the perilous journey. Deer would go, for she was swift. Fox would go, for he was clever. And they thought they should send Mouse, for you could barely see Mouse. And so the three brave animals set off. They came to the top of the western mountains. There in the valley below, they saw the great long house of thunder, smoke pouring from its smoke hole. Fox looked at Deer, Deer at Fox. Both looked at Mouse. They told Mouse to go down to the longhouse to see what was to be seen without being seen. So down she scampered. To the side of the great longhouse she came and listened. Sleeping inside. Beside him slumbered his three daughters, each of whom had fangs which came to beneath her chin. Mouse ran in. Behind the daughters she crept as they leaned back against the wall. She noticed each wore an apron tied with a bow. So little Mouse jumped up and with her jaws pulled loose each of the apron knots so that when the daughters stood up, the aprons would fall down. Then Mouse ran to the great lodge pole which held up the longhouse. She climbed up, put her head out the smoke hole, but then jumped back in. There was the reason Thunder and his daughters could sleep and not guard the stolen fire. It was Wo-Wozim, the guardian bird.
I am the bird who never sleeps. I am the bird who never sleeps.
Wo-Wozim's bright red eyes stared all across the world.
I am the bird who never sleeps.
Mouse remembered a lullaby. She sang to her mouse babies deep beneath the leaves. So quietly, she began to sing. And although he did not know it, Wo-Wozim was listening.
I am the bird, the bird who never sleeps. I am that.
Wo-Wozim fell asleep. Down the lodge pole came Mouse. Out to the other two animals she ran. She jumped in the air. Down ran Deer. Into the long house she galloped. She saw the great fire burning. Took a burning coal, put it at the back of a hoof, galloped out. Down ran Fox.
He took a wooden flute, opened it up, put a burning coal in it, closed the flute, put the flute in his jaws and ran. And up the mountain, the two animals with the stolen fire ran. When suddenly fire began to burn brighter, and it made such a great noise that thunder went and suddenly awakened. Where is my fire? And he rose up above the floor. The three daughters awakened. They jumped up and foom, foom, foom. Down fell their aprons. They fell in a pile upon the floor. And Thunder went, no, no, and took the longhouse and went, nah, and threw it up into the heavens in a great whirling storm cloud of angry winds and rain. Thunder began to chase deer and fox. Where is my fire? He called, looking down upon the world. But all deer and fox could do was run. They ran up across the high slopes and down the other side of the mountains. They jumped on the rocks across the stream. Ran through the high meadows. And as fast as they could, jumped into the forest. And all the while, Thunder looked out of his storm cloud, his face peering down at the earth. He called, where is my fire? Where is it? But the animals could only run. When suddenly, Thunder looked down, and there in the trees far below, saw two thin trails of smoke. Yeah, there's my fire! Wind, rain, fall upon them! And suddenly, the tops of the trees began to bend around deer and fox as they ran. Rain droplets began to jump and leap from leaf to leaf down upon the fire, putting out their fire, and all they could do was run. When suddenly they ran past a hole in the ground. This was the hole belonging to Skunk. Skunk put his head up. Skunk did not like being awakened. Skunk saw deer and fox run by. Skunk looked up. There, right above, peering from the cloud, was the face of Thunder. Where is my fire? Well, Skunk was so annoyed. Up he jumped, bent over, and sprayed a great cloud of skunk smell right in Thunder's face. Thunder went, and fell to the earth. And you know, once he had hit the earth, Thunder could not fly. Out of the woods walked the animals. Deer and fox, raccoon, wolf, moose, wolverine. Before them all walked Skunk. Skunk said,
henceforward, Thunder, you must remain high in the sky where you belong, or I will spray you again. And instead of stealing fire from the earth, you must give it back. Each time you bring your storms, you must throw fire to the earth so that the animals always have fire.
Thunder, knowing he was defeated, looked at them all. And left. And ever since then, according to the Maidu Indians, when the tinder is dry in the forests, and the thunderstorms ride low above the treetops, lightning explodes in the trees, and fire burns. It is only old Thunder keeping his promise to the animals.
We just heard a Native American tale told by Odds Bodkin called Theft of Fire.
And we're all listening to the Zucchini Brothers live at the clubhouse.
Wow. I wonder if this rain's ever going to let up.
I hope so. Well, while we're waiting, let's listen to our second story. This one's from Gerald Fierst. It's a Japanese folktale called Hiroshima Taro.
Hiroshima Taro lived on the coast of Japan, where the blue Pacific water meets the white sandy beach. One day, while he was walking along the water's edge, he saw a group of boys with sharp, pointed sticks poking and prying and trying to crack open the shell of a sea turtle that they had pulled from the water. "Boys," said Hiroshima Taro, "what are you doing? It's one thing to catch our food, but to kill a beautiful creature just for play? Shame on you, shame." And the boys, they dropped their sticks, they hung their heads, they walked away in shame. And then Hiroshima Taro, he lifted up the sea turtle, took it back to the ocean, and let it go free. And the days passed, and the days passed, and Hiroshima Taro forgot all about the sea turtle. Other things were on his mind. You see, the fish weren't coming to his nets, and every day he had to go further and further out to sea to places he had never been beyond the sight of land. And one day he had gone so far he lost track of the time. And the sun began to set, and the night began to spread across the ocean waves, and Hiroshima Taro, he turned his boat and pulled on the oars, trying to find a sight of the coast, a landmark to lead him home. But it was too late. It was too late. Night had come, and now a mist rose out of the water, and clouds covered the stars, and the wind began to blow, and the waves began to roll the boat back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, when suddenly out of the water there came the great, green, scaly head of a sea monster. "Oh, don't eat me," said Hiroshima Taro. But the monster came closer and closer until its green, slimy nose touched Hiroshima Taro's nose. "Don't you recognize me?" said the sea monster. "I am the turtle whose life you saved so many weeks ago. But you're so big. I am a magic creature, and I have told of your kindness to my mistress, the Princess of the Sea. She wishes to reward you. Come, come with me. Climb upon my back, and I will take you down, down to her palace at the bottom of the sea." And Hiroshima Taro, he climbed upon the turtle's shell, and down, 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 down they swam, through bottle green water, through pillars of coral, through forests of seaweed, down to the white sand dunes at the ocean's bottom, and there rose a palace of pearl. And when Hiroshima Taro entered, sitting on a throne of seashells was the Princess of the Sea. "Welcome, Hiroshima Taro. I have heard of your kindness to my creature, the sea turtle, and I wish to reward you. Food for Hiroshima Taro." And immediately a banquet feast was laid before him to eat. "Robes for Hiroshima Taro." And silken robes fell upon his shoulders. "Stay with us, Hiroshima Taro. Stay with us and enjoy all of the pleasures and all of the treasures of my kingdom beneath the sea." And Hiroshima Taro stayed. And the day passed as if in a heartbeat. But when the day was done, Hiroshima Taro's heart grew sad. He grew lonely. He missed his friends. He missed his family. He missed his little house, the little town in which he had always lived. He wanted to go back to the fresh breeze, the rustling leaves, the world of humankind. He went to the princess and said, "Let me be free." "Of course, Hiroshima Taro, you are not a prisoner. But if you must go, take with you this magic box." And she held out to him the most beautiful black lacquer box he had ever seen. He went to open it and she said, don't open it. "But keep it always with you. And if ever you wish to come back to me, just rub it like so and it will be." And Hiroshima Taro, He took the magic box. He put it in his silken robes. He climbed back upon the turtle shell. And up, 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 up they swam, through bottle green water, through pillars of coral, through forests of seaweed, up, 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 into the bubbling foam of the waves, into the white, foaming crest of the waves that carried him back, 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 back to the very place whence he had come. And then he ran, 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 ran with his magic box, ran in his silken robes, ran with the stories of magic and adventure, ran to his little home, ran to his little town, ran to his family and his friends. But when he got to where he was going, everything had changed. His little house was nowhere to be seen. His little town had grown into a great city with buildings that rose to the sky. And all the faces of all the people were strange to him. "Do you know where Rashamataro lives?" he asked a passerby. "Do you know where Rashamataro lives? Does anyone know where Rashamataro lives?" And an old man, hearing his cries, said, "Rashamataro? Why, I have heard that name in a legend of long ago. He was a fisherman who went to sea and never came back. But that was in my great-great-grandfather's day. There is no one now named Rashamataro." How could it be? How could it be? Everything had changed, but Rashamataro was the same. What magic had taken over him? And Rashamataro remembered the magic of the box. Perhaps the answer was in the box. And a little voice inside of him, it seemed to say, "Open it, open it." And his hand moved towards the lid of the box. "No, the prince has said I must not." But the little voice, it wouldn't stop. It beat with his heart, it ran through his blood, it rang in his ears, it drew his hand closer and 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 closer until he opened the box, he opened the box, he opened the box, and out of the box there flew a great cloud of smoke that swirled about him. And when the smoke disappeared, Rashamataro's hair was white, his face was wrinkled, his body was bent, and he was very, very old. And then he looked at that empty box and understood. He understood that what had seemed to him a day beneath the ocean waves had really been a century. And all those years of his life had been kept in that box. Now he had let them fly away. He could never go home again, nor could he ever return to the Princess of the Sea. And Rashamataro began to cry. And the salt of his tears fell into the salt of the sea. And the sound of his cries became the sighs of the ocean waves. And you can hear. Even to this day, if you take a seashell and hold it to your ear, the sound of Rashamataro still crying for all that he lost.
Rashamataro from Gerald Fierce.
Oh, here comes the mailman.
Hey, Mr.
Hi, Mr. Weir.
Howdy, kids. Here's your mail.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Weir.
You're welcome, Jack. You kids got the right idea enjoying this rainy day from your front porch.
You're welcome to join us if you'd like, Mr. Weir.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Susan, but I've got mail to deliver, rain or shine.
Oh, I hear tomorrow's supposed to be a beautiful day, lots of sunshine.
Heard the same thing, Sam. Hope it turns out that way. I'll tell you what. If you don't mind, I'll dry out for a few minutes here on your front porch and listen to a song.
Okay. Sure. Okay. We've got one right here from Rosenchance.
They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. Oh, such a beautiful day. It's a day to sing, sing to the beat. It's a day to dance, move and tap your feet. It's a day for everyone. It's a day of beautiful sun. They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. It's a day to laugh, laugh right out loud. It's a day to smile and blow away a cloud. It's a day to clap your hands. It's a day to hear the band. When the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. They say when the sun shines down, it's a beautiful day. Oh, such a beautiful day. Oh, such a beautiful day.
That's our show. We'd like to say hello to you if you listen to us on stations like KTDB in Pine Hill, New Mexico.
Hello!
If you'd like any information about the Zucchini Brothers, our concerts, our products, or anything you've heard on this show, or just to say hello, you can always go to www.zucchinibrothers.com. That's one word, and it's spelled Z-U-C-C-H-I-N-I-B-R-O-T-H-E-R-S. Keep those emails coming and look for show number
1,300.
The Zucchini Brothers Live at the Clubhouse is produced, recorded, and edited by Sam Zucchini and written by Jack Zucchini, Susan Meyer, and Sam Zucchini. The Clubhouse music librarian is Steve Zucchini. This show is a presentation of Zucchini Productions.
Let's sing it.
Sweaters and cheese. Sweaters and cheese. Sweaters and cheese and fudge.
Rain's kind of nice, but the Zucchini Land's got too much. Polly, stay up on the porch. Polly, stay up. Polly. Polly.
This is Eboshi from Cartel Madras, and you're listening to CJSF.
I was on the back of your mind. I was on the back of your lap. You were in the back of the car. You were in the back of my heart. I was in the back of the bar. You know what I do? Take things too far. Don't know where to start or begin. Don't know how it ends. Don't know how to say what I meant. Don't know how to say how I feel. Baby, is it real? I was like 34 double D's. You know what I like? Ice cold.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Bernie B.